Breakfast is on us. 102.9 Fresh FM.
It's 9:07 on Namibia's Heart and Soul, Young Achieve for On Your Radio with What If. Essentially, it's a question that we all ask when it comes out to our personal journeys, isn't it? Thank you so much for choosing us. We appreciate it. On Fridays, you know for a fact, we bring in people who we talk about, who we gossip about, who we follow, who we love, who we hate, who we envy, who we find inspiration from, whatever the case may be. They are a talking point for one reason or another. And one such person is someone that is extremely dear to me for very personal reasons. She knows.
What is this? It's just between me and her. No.
Nah, I'm not willing to bring that on radio for now.
You know what I mean? So rude, leaving me out.
Let's have our multi-millions in our bank, and then the two of us will be smiling somewhere on a mountain, and then we will recall our journey, personal journey.
Yeah.
She's a professional speaker. She's an employee wellness consultant, and she's a facilitator as well. She is your favorite. She's my favorite. Maybe not someone else's favorite, but hey, who cares? She's here. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Hermine Elago.
That felt so special.
Yeah,
it really did.
What?
That intro absolutely felt special.
Of course.
Yeah.
That came straight from the heart, Macy. You know, thank you so much for making time for us ahead, man. We really appreciate you. And you're a busy bee, dude. Like, you are all over the country. You are all over the world, actually. Didn't you, like, just travel recently? Where were you?
No.
So, currently,
I am doing a lot of stuff here in NAM. And then I'm going to be going to SA. I have talks about going to Germany again because I did go to Germany once, and I spoke on vulnerability, which is a topic that's really, really dear to my heart, because it is one of my core values, and that's how I choose to show up in the world. Very hard in Namibia, where we are very conservative and kind of airing your, what some would call, dirty laundry. Is very taboo in Namibia, especially when you're speaking about mental health, when and not just on a surface level, but when you go deep about the actual things that you're facing and as a result, what happens, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, whoa, it's too much.
It's a little bit too much.
Yeah. But I'm just like, if I'm too much, go find less because I'm not changing me. It's that whole saying that goes, you know, be you and the world will adjust. So when I was in Germany, I spoke about vulnerability, and there was a man, he was about in his 60s, and he came up to me and he says it was the first time in his life he had ever heard of the concept or even the word vulnerability, because in German, like as Germans, everything is about perfection and precision.
100%.
So you do not get to bring your messy parts to anything.
So-called weakness.
Your mistakes, you have to rip them apart, dissect them so that you never, ever do it again. So mistakes aren't celebrated in Germany, or at least in the spaces that he was operating in. And I was just like, for me, it was like a bit like, wow, it took me aback because, you know, we kind of look at everything German and we think, wow, beautiful.
That's the standard.
Absolutely, that's the standard. But the standard comes at a cost, and it comes at the cost of a man who is 60 years old never having just shown up in the world as his true self. And that felt a little bit sad to me.
Well, Hermine, let's take it back. Let's understand the child in you. You know. I mean, yes, we do know that you come from a very supportive and a good family. But who are you at the core, Hermine? Like, just where were your schools? Do you understand? What were your memories?
You want to go way
Let's go back.
Before you went to advertising school, we want all
we want the primary school, high school tea, please. Including your first kiss. I'm playing.
One of my closest friends goes, this is a DMC, a deep, meaningful conversation.
We're taking that. It's done. It's right. It's ours now.
She's like, no surface level here. Yeah. So I was about five and a half when my parents sent me to boarding school in Cape Town. So you have to understand that both my parents are poverty cycle breakers. My mom's education level reaches grade 8 and no further. My father's education level reaches grade 7 and no further. My mom dropped out of school because she was the eldest amongst her siblings.
Yeah.
So that she had to basically start bringing in an income as the eldest to support the rest of the siblings, which is the experience of many of our elders.
Yeah.
And so she ultimately became a nurse. And my father walked from, he was a goat and a cattle herder in the north after having left school. He walked from the north to Windhoek and ended up in construction. So, which is...
Walked from the north?
Yes. To find better.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories of that nature.
Yeah, and there are. There's a lot. You would be surprised how many of our parents share similar stories along these lines. They had to do something in order to, you know, elevate and we are very privileged, honestly, the world that we live in. But when they got married, I think one of the highest values for them was that their children have the education that they did not get.
Yeah.
And as a result, that's why when they spoke and they asked around their circles, because at this point they had become business people, they had become respected, et cetera, a lot of people told them, you know, don't trust the Namibian education system, because we were still like in a Bantu phase. It was still hard, you know. Our private schools weren't really strong and secure yet. And so, I mean, I'm 42 and no one ever believes me. So so we're talking late 80s, you know, early 90s.
Mm.
So it was 1989 when I went to school in Cape Town. This was 4-5 years before the release of Mandela. So you also have to understand the climate.
Yes, still apartheid Cape Town.
Yes, so the space that I was in, I went to a very elite, it's still one of the top 10 schools in SA. So it was very elite, British, all girls, private school, and it was predominantly white. I think in most my classes, I was the only black girl. So I did not speak English, and it was British. I only spoke Oshiwambo and Afrikaans, and no one spoke Afrikaans really because of the British nature of the school. So I would sit up at night after everybody would go to sleep and read so that I could speed up
and
the speed
up.
At which I was learning English. So you know those... Here is Bill. I would sit there late at night by myself in a corner, because I was like, the fastest way for this to happen is I need to read, and I need to read a lot of English books. And one of the matrons would sometimes sit up with me too. And then I found that my entire life, I've always had this weird sadness that has followed me, almost like a shadow. You know, so how all of us have a shadow that follows us. I've had two. I've had that physical shadow that we all see, but this invisible shadow of like sadness that I just couldn't really understand. When I got to, and I think having been sent to boarding school so young, I developed a deep need for approval because I felt rejected. So I developed a deep fear of rejection, but that offset approval addiction. I just needed to be seen. I felt like I just needed, if I could just be seen and heard, that I would matter in this world. And we all know that approval is an inside job, but a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old does not know
that.
So you seek it externally. You seek it. You're seeking it in the eyes of every single person that you're looking in, and they can't give that to you. So you build more evidence that you aren't accepted, that you are rejected. And when I got to high school, I think that sadness grew to like really high levels. You know, I was doing things that were out of pocket, you know. So I started smoking.
A bit rebel?
Yes, okay. Full on rebellion. So I started smoking cigarettes really early. I went, one of the girls in boarding school, she took me like, so the school was at the foot of Table Mountain. So if you just walked a bit, we were like in the forest.
Is it a combined school? Sorry. Is it a combined school?
Like
from primary to
all the way.
Okay,
all the way to grade 12. Okay.
So
okay.
On the mountain?
Yes. Mm. So she, on the mountain, she taught me how to smoke cigarettes, but it's, and this was around grade 10. So still like I'm 16, but that escalated to, because of the great wealth that a lot of the girls that I went to school with possessed, they also had access to a lot of things. So drugs came into play really early for me, but I'm really lucky because somehow it didn't catch. So, you know, I tried skiing in Aspen, as they call it.
Okay.
You know? I tried the one that makes you ecstatic, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And all of this all of this.
But your system just didn't latch on.
Luckily for me, it didn't latch on. And I don't know why, but it didn't stop me from experimenting because it did give you those short bouts of dopamine, those short bouts of like escape. And those and that's what I would always see, because I wanted to escape being in a world that I felt like I didn't fit in. And if I could find it in small pockets, whether it's alcohol, whether it's boys, whatever it was, I would seek for it. And obviously this is all just very destructive to the soul, to the nature of who you are, because you're reaching outside of yourself, and no one, no boy, no drug, no cigarette, no alcohol is ever going to give you any of these things. And then I was taken to a school psychologist, because the school was like, a bit of a problem.
It started affecting the grades and stuff now.
It started affecting just who I was. Okay. So I was really like loud, and you know when you're like, yo, this kid abrasive is acting out, you know?
But was it all just for you to be seen and heard? Mm. Do you think that's why you were doing all of these things at the time?
Ultimately, Shaquan, I think what all of us want is to belong. And we feel that we belong the most when we are in spaces where we feel valued. And we feel valued when we feel like we're being heard and we're being seen.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a flowing out of all of that. And when that doesn't happen, as children, you throw a tantrum. You know, if like your parents aren't listening to you, you like roll around. Mm-hmm. But then adult or bigger tantrums come out in different ways. It's alcohol. It is, you know, whatever, you know, being a little messy is the adult version of a child rolling on the floor, screaming and crying. Because I can't do that. And trust me, like I freelance at different places and there are 60-year-olds who throw tantrums. They just do it in ways that kids don't do it, you know? There are some adults who are just toddlers in grown-up bodies, you know, and that's ultimately because, you know, a lot of us aren't doing the deep work that requires us to be able to show up in spaces whole.
And like that 60-year-old man that you spoke about in Germany.
And I think that is the place that I am slowly getting to now, is being whole within myself, is being sovereign within myself, and understanding that, you know, I do not need external validation in order. And external validation is a big thing. Especially there by the social media.
Funny that you mentioned this. I checked a podcast recently with Will Smith, and I mentioned this the other day.
Yesterday.
He was on Drinks and Champs, right? And he was just talking about how he has reached a level, like the highest level. The same way at the bottom, when you fall off, it's the same scenario for when you reach the highest level. And he says he fell off the cliff of the highest level.
Yeah.
Right? And he's now at a point now where nothing phases him. He is trying to find the happiness from inside. He's trying to love himself. It needs to come from inside. You know, his own feeling. And that's similar to what you're saying right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's no secret for a lot of people that I have had some very public mental health, I don't know if you want to call them, you know, the my 2000s called them a Menti B, mental breakdown.
Yesterday.
Like, crashing out.
Are you having a Menti B, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because I think that around 2016, 2017, that's when I started my fitness journey, which is what a lot of people have, you know, kind of joined me in community for. I've been very open about it. The fact that I have, which is also another part of trying to fill that hole within myself, an emotional eating and compulsive binge eating disorder.
Wait, sorry. So you were never a big girl, actually, like growing up as a kid. You were never...
As a kid,
because you're talking about emotional eating now.
So I developed emotional eating throughout. Over the years. So I would say from like late teens all the way up. And also because I come from a family that is genetically bigger. I have been, so I've been big for, I was like small up until my teens and then boom.
Right after high school, university.
I gained all of, that's when I started gaining all of the weight and but even then I was battling with my weight through high school. That's when I started battling with my weight. And then after that, it was just like, you know what? I gave into the emotional eating and I was like, take me, let's go. And
so you start now this journey now, this fitness journey.
Yes.
And there's a community of people that
Yeah. So I started sharing on, because you know, what's the first thing most of us do when we are about to embark on a journey? We go to social media and we try and find stories that resonate for us, you know, stories that of other people sharing, you know, if it's sobriety, you try and look for people who have gone
on
sober.
The same journey.
You know, you seek that. And when I looked on social media and especially, and particularly in Namibia, I couldn't find anything that resonated with me. People were posting this, the messy before and then this perfect after. No one was talking about that messy between. Middle.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where we spend most of our time.
Yes.
The in between, yes. Where you're falling, where it's two steps back, where you go back to binge eating, where you don't go to the gym for 3 months because you don't have the energy, where it feels hard, where you gain some weight back. No one was talking about that. So I was like, well, if I can't find it, then I will tell.
Create that safe space.
Exactly. Yeah. And I will. And I did it initially for myself. Aww. And you know when you start on social media, it's just like one person is like, hey, girl, see you. And then it's like two likes, whatever. Initially, it was just like, okay, this is for me. So it's all good. Next thing I know is when you tell your truth and you show up authentically, your people will find you. Your tribe will find you. And the next thing I knew, it was like there were a lot of people who were like, I resonate. And I'm also doing this now. And, you know, it grew into community.
Yeah.
And that's why I always say community will always trump followers. Mm. Followers come and go,
yes.
You know.
Yeah.
You go through a bad phase, they're like, ay, guy, NSK. You go through, you know, when things hit the fan for you, followers drop off. Community's like, ouch, that looks like it hurt, but we're still here. We're still here. It's like, oh. Friend, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Matters all right.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's get up. Let's keep going.
But you know, I'm so curious to know how, because you're a mom, right?
Yes.
To the most beautiful girlie
in the world.
Yes. How has being Grace's mom kept you together during this period?
I think being Grace's mom is the only thing that has kept me alive. Even if it's messily so.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, you know, if it's God that you believe in, if it's the universe that you believe in, all I know is that the Creator knows that some of us need these kids. And it's not that they should bear the responsibility of keeping us here, because that's wrong. We cannot be placing the responsibility
on the kids.
But in a silent way and in an unspoken way, we know, well, I know for myself that I'm here because, you know, there's at least one person in this world who's counting on me being here. And for that, like, I'm here. But I also gave birth to probably one of the most self-led, self-motivated, phenomenal Ama 2000s in the world. And she's like,
it's coming from within for her.
Yes.
That is amazing.
And she's very like woke and very awake. Like I was telling somebody, so the current diagnosis I have, I was diagnosed with bipolar first.
Then, you said you went for second opinion, right?
Yes, because the bipolar 2 diagnosis that I got was in December of
2023.
Yes. It was in December of 2023. So I had a really bad breakdown. And on that day, Limey came, my sister, and she took me and we went to the state facility because it's December, most psychologists are gone. And within an hour of speaking to me, it was a medical intern decided that I had bipolar 2. And when I spoke to other psychologists later, they're like, it's very hard to diagnose anyone on the spot you know, we hadn't really walked a journey or anything along those lines, but I guess I was giving certain attributes. So because I'm somebody who is chronically depressed, sometimes chronic depression can almost come up and show as being bipolar. So and because I was also having manic episodes, which is like those extreme highs and then extreme lows, which is a very bipolar 2 attribute to have. So you know, some of these with mental health conditions, some of them can kind of carry you know, some of them carry, you know, attributes of each other, but they're not the same thing. So when I went to go see my actual psychologist, And I also went to see somebody who kind of does trauma healing and stuff. Both of them were like, no, our gut is, it's not giving bipolar 2. Yeah. What it is giving is ADHD. Mm-hmm. And when I had a few more sessions with my psychologist, he's like, it's a combination of ADHD and chronic depression.
Okay.
And so that's where we've landed on. Hmm. And I've shared all the time that I am, as much as I love reading and as much as I'm a student of life, I'm a student of myself before I'm a student of anything else.
100%.
And when I studied what chronic depression is and what ADHD is, that makes sense to me. Mm. And I think it's really important. And I always tell everybody, even you are there's a saying that goes, everybody's the expert of their own lives. Even the psychologist, you don't have to accept a diagnosis. You can get second opinions. Yeah. Rumble with it for yourself. Sit with it. Go research. Go study. Go watch the videos. Because had I accepted bipolar 2 and run with that, it could have been more detrimental.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Edmund, I can tell you right now, the medical professionals don't like that. Oh, why are you giving me second opinion? Trust me. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. It's 9:28. We'll be back in a bit.
80 years ago, Nectar started a journey.
Weekend is here. Fresh FM 102.9.
Happy Easter. Yep. It's 9:30 on Namibia's Heart and Soul, Easter weekend, Good Friday. Thank you so much for choosing us. Mm-hmm. This is that other advert says, this is the gold standard of radio.
Of radio.
Thank you so much. Okay,
yes.
Accept it. Thank you.
And it's a beautiful Good Friday and we're having good conversations and we have had me.
That's right. Hermine Lago, who is I really don't want to call you a motivational speaker. I really hate that word.
I was about to say,
why?
I hate that word. I hate what has become of the profession in this country. Mm. Every single Paul, Sarah and Amhamub is now a motivational speaker in this country.
No, but everyone does not have the heart of Hermine. It's a people are trying.
Yeah. Professional speaker, please, Clara.
So let me say this when it comes to the speaking fraternity.
Yeah.
The reason why I choose not to go by motivational speaker is because we all know motivation is fleeting. If you have done anything, studied, gone on a fitness journey, whatever it is, you know that motivation doesn't last. Motivation serves its purpose in that it gets you started. But we all know that it's discipline, it's habits, it's your values. Those are the things that carry you. Those are the real champions. Mm. Motivation is like a cheerleader that is like, yes.
But then you have to do the actual...
Exactly. And this is why I say that I am a... what I actually do is facilitate development processes.
Yes.
And I help corporates and individuals like rumble with the difficult things that they can't really put words to. Mm. And I have learned to be able to not just put words to, but also to co-create the experience. Mm. So it's not talking at people.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can just put on a TEDx video there and then motivation done. Why pay somebody to go do that? You know what people need is tools. What people need is what can I take from this that will actually impact and affect my life? And that is why I'm not a motivational speaker.
Hermine, going back to the ADHD and the chronic depression, right?
The diagnosis
thereof. You know, I'm a very practical person, right? I'm a very practical person. I'm about my money and I'm about my opportunities and so on. Yes. And I'm just thinking, when, what did you call it? How the I'm a 2000s call it?
Meant to be,
right? When you have your meant to be, right?
Yeah.
Meant to be's context.
Mental breakdown.
Yes.
Mental breakdown.
Got it. I'm a
2000 say. When you have these MTBs, right? Like for me, and when even with other examples all around the world, right? I always think,
how does it impact
your day to day, especially opportunities?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Now, for you specifically, did you ever find yourself in a position where you fumbled an opportunity as a result of the diagnosis? At the time, perhaps you didn't even know that it was an opportunity and that it was that exact diagnosis.
Or like even relationships that you've had, you know, with clients, for example, for years, and then it sort of shifted because of that time.
So I didn't come here to tell lies. Hmm. So the very, very truth is absolutely, especially like I mentioned before, Namibia, we are a conservative country.
Yeah. Mm.
People do not want to engage with something that they feel might be potentially messy. And somebody openly having a battle with their mental health is messy for some core. They're like, yo, my core business is finance. Can we just have a speaker who can come neatly do this thing and neatly exit? We do not need everything else. So I will tell you this. It affected my opportunities. It affected my relationships prior to the diagnosis. Because I did not know what was happening to me. You know, so in 2023, when I had that first, it's a breakdown, whatever, you know, call it what it is. When I had that first breakdown, it was the first time I could actually give word to, okay, there is something about me that actually I need support, right? So the best way that I can put it is this. I was speaking to a psychiatrist based in Joburg, and they said, when somebody has cancer, when you first don't know, you feel all of these things and you know that something is not well up until you get the diagnosis. Once you get the diagnosis, the whole world understands. A team comes around you. You know, oncologists come to support you. Your GP, work will even understand if you need to take time off. Now, with cancer, so say now it's cancer of the lungs. It's your lungs, which we understand. Without your lungs, like, you're not going to be, you know, the world is not going to be. But now, when somebody has a mental health condition, be it depression, ADHD, bipolar 1, bipolar 2, whatever it is, you know that there is something and that you are not well. And then you get the diagnosis. But what the world does in this instance, that they go, go over there. We can't put up with,
associated with,
especially
this
in this conservative space.
But in
like
both
Namibia.
Space, but in both cases, neither one of these people have asked for it. It's an illness. Mm. It literally is an illness. It's just that the one is affecting your brain and it's affecting your cognitive function. Mm. And what the psychiatrist helped me understand is, you need a team just as much as somebody who has any other physical diagnosis has. And this is why they call mental health conditions the invisible disability, because it absolutely is. You need
getting
support.
Out of bed. Taking a shower.
Getting out of bed is hard. And the thing is, you're in pain, but it's a pain that you cannot describe. You cannot tell and you cannot point to it. But it's a pain that exists. It's just that it's invisible and it's still affecting your life. And the psychiatrist told me that, you know, your brain is the place, and your prefrontal cortex, for example, this is where your ability to form human connection lies. This is where your rational thinking lies. This is where your worldview and how you see the world. When that shuts down, it becomes very, very hard to be a part of this world. Oh, yeah. And this is why you get people who are just like, I just can't. I can't get through this day. And so prior to being diagnosed, I was going through life thugging it out, basically.
Yeah, basically,
but it's like thugging it out with a broken leg, but not getting a cast on it and
it's
crutches.
You're just
dragging your leg along.
Just literally dragging.
Just limping.
Yeah, you know, you're just limping through life. Mm. That is what I was doing. So I was just limping through life with an illness that was affecting so many things. After being diagnosed now, now I know exactly what it is that I need to do. So for example, somebody like me, I cannot drink alcohol. I just can't.
Yeah.
I do not have the same experience. Other people, you know, NSK or Shaquan, you guys can have a glass of wine.
And
it's all good. Me, I wake up, it's condemnation. It is. I can't. And because alcohol in and of itself is a depressant, I can't add anything to the fact that I am already somebody who's chronically depressed. And what people don't understand is, I think we expect chronic depression to look a certain way, but chronic depression is your friend who's always making jokes. It's the friend who's always smiling.
It's the friend
who's always reaching
out
for Pete, you know. They're just thugging it out in this life, you know. And so
that's true.
Yeah. I do find now that I know what it is. It's, you know, somebody says, you know, once the demon has a name. You know what it is that you're fighting. Mm. You know, now that I have a name to what it is that I'm walking alongside, because I'm not suffering. I always tell people, I'm not suffering.
Yeah.
I know exactly, I've got the necessary tools to navigate this. I know what it is that I need to do, mm-hmm. you know, therapy and all of that.
Yeah.
It's actually become a superpower because number one, it's made me more empathetic because I understand that people might not be going through what I'm going through, but everybody's going through something. Number two, it's made me a lot more human. But number three, it's also taught me, you know, people with ADHD, because we hyperfixate and we hyperfocus, we can actually do insanely amazing things and deep work. Someone with ADHD could write a book in a weekend if they wanted to. Because of the level that our brain hyperfixates and hyperfocuses on things. Mm. So there is a, what's his name? He is a billionaire, a Formula One billionaire.
Mm.
He has chronic depression, and he speaks out openly about it. And I guess when it comes from somebody who is
up, I mean, all of that money,
yes,
depressed. Why are you depressed about billionaire?
No, yes. Listen, absolutely.
Just buy the depression away.
You can't. And that's the thing. You can't. You absolutely can't. But you know what he said? He said that he has found that his battles with mental health are a superpower, because he said that the majority of the successful people he knows actually go to therapy and they're battling one or other form, and it's because they're deeply sensitive. And being deeply sensitive in this world usually causes depression, because you feel everything
on a deeper level.
That's at the end of the day, in two words, that is what I am. I'm just a deep feeler.
Yeah.
I feel everything, and I feel it intensely. So I feel sadness intensely. I feel
joy.
But I feel joy intensely.
Intensely as well, yeah.
So it's almost, the best way to be able to put it is, I live life in HD. High definition. Everything is high definition.
Yeah, team, we're running a little bit out of time.
Okay.
Yeah? I wanted to ask though, after, now that you say that, you know, you can name your, you know, the demon, you know better how to deal with it. How has that changed you at the core?
Shaquan, I feel like I am now I'm in the era of my life where I am whole. This is the best time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, after what happened in October, I was battling, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on air, but suicide ideation.
Yeah.
And if we look at the numbers, I'm not the only one in this country, but it was also very public what happened. When you have reached that level of rock bottom and lost everything, I fear nothing. I fear absolutely nothing. Now I feel like I can show up in the world as my true self. And when that happens, the world opens back up to you. I can't really explain how it's happening, but the world, even the corporate world, is hungry for authenticity. Absolutely. And now, because I've got nothing to lose, I can show up as my most authentic self. And my most authentic self is, yes, I feel things deeply. I go through stuff. But now I have all the tools in place to be able to navigate it without falling apart. Mm. Mental breakdowns happen because you don't know what's happening. And it's like, you don't know what's happening to your car, so it breaks down.
Mm.
But if you know, it needs engine oil.
You get the engine oil.
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
My car, me, I don't break down anymore because I can tell, I'm in a space where I'm not valued.
Wow.
I'm in a space where I feel unsafe. I remove myself, it goes away. Ping, ping, I feel that, okay, I'm starting to burn out here. I need to take some rest. I need to do some breathing. Ping, ping. Okay, perhaps I need to go to therapy. I can feel that the depression is coming up. For another big reason, and I know that this is the last thing because I know time is running out, is there's something called SAD, which is seasonal affective disorder.
Seasonal affective disorder.
It happens. I mean, there's even Facebook groups, support groups for this.
Mm.
So in winter, what happens to a lot of people, and especially now, somebody who's prone to depression is... So even people who aren't prone to depression become deeply affected. And they get seasonal. It's called seasonal depression. Basically, it's like getting a flu. You get like a little bit of depression that comes.
A little
comes
bit of hay fever because it's the season.
So I already know when winter's about to come up, I need to get myself vitamin D. I need to increase that because you're getting a whole lot less of it. There's special lights that you can get in your home that supply a little bit more of that. Mm. I know that I need to make sure that I keep eating well, that I don't stop working out even though it's cold, because all of these things support me, that I don't start drinking Glühwein because I know alcohol and me, you know. So it's knowing that my car will break down if I don't put engine oil in it.
Yeah.
It's the exact same with me. And I know what that engine oil looks like and my car is good.
Hermine, you mentioned the October situation that you experienced last year. I mean, I had a brother that committed suicide as well when I was very, very young, grade 4, right? Mm. And until this day, our family, we just don't understand. We just don't get it, right? And I mean, as a grown man right now, you know, when you read other stories, when you experience other, you know, people around the world and so on, and read their stories, there's quite a number of people that talk about voices in their head. That's the loose way that they you know, explain this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the case with you, or was it something different for you?
No. So, the voices in the head, that could be schizophrenia, but we're not diagnosing anyone or anything. So I don't battle with that. I have my own negative critic, you know, my own self-doubt and my own, like, am I even good enough? Am I even worthy? Am I good? You know, that voice I have, because, I mean, it's the inner critic that most people have. I did not have that. The best way to put it is, it was a quote that I read. It said, it's not that I want my life to come to an end. It's that I want life as I know it to come to an end. I wanted
This pain I'm feeling to come to an end.
I didn't want to feel, I don't want to feel this pain. I don't want to feel so much, and I don't want to feel so hard. And I don't, and it's like looking out into the world and feeling like I just don't belong, you know? And I just felt that if I could just remove myself, I could remove that aspect.
Yeah.
Because anyone who has depression will tell you that stuff is crippling. And when it comes, it's literally like having a broken leg. It is crippling.
Yeah.
Mm. It is. And then you still have to, and like the person with a broken leg, you need to put a cast on it. You need to get the crutches. Then you need to go back out there and walk through life, except the guy with the crutch, people can see, so we understand. The guy with the chronic depression, we can't see.
Invincible, but they
so
are there.
It's like, just get it together.
Yeah.
But we're just like, okay, you know what? But if you don't know, you're dragging your leg along. Now that I know, at least I've got a cast and I've got a crutch. Yeah.
But like with your
analogy,
you know
when
right
to
now,
reach out to
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yes.
With your analogy,
to the tools.
Yes.
Come on, girl.
There we go.
Hermine Lago, thank you so much for your time. I think we can talk all day, I promise you.
Yeah.
Especially with broadcasters, you
Whoa.
Know.
Yeah.
It's 9:47. Hermine Lago sharing her incredible story, which literally was just a drop in this humongous ocean.
No, absolutely.
Hermine, you're a friend
of the
show.
I must come on to... I hear NSK might have a podcast on the side there
somewhere. Of course. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Yes, like, you guys can extend that conversation.
I mean, I've just already noted here, dude.
Yeah.
thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
You know, from the both of us.
And can I just say, it's you two. You guys are the gold standard.
We are the gold standard.
You are.
That was right over my head. We'll take it. Thank you so much for trusting us to be your safe space.
Mm.
And thank you so much for your time. NSK and I, we're so thankful and so grateful for your life.
And I'm grateful. Thank you. Me emotional. Switch off the things.
Yeah, switch it off.
9:48, that's your time. Hermine Lago on Namibia's Heart and Soul. We've got some good music lined up. Stick around.
Breakfast is on us. 102.9 Fresh FM. Fresh FM.